wait, but it's good. I'd like to call this meeting to order. It is the regular meeting of the Board of Trustees of the Canyatillo Independent School District. It's January the 17th, 2012. It's 6:05 p.m. We've got a packed house. It's so nice to see all of y'all. And Tony, could you please call roll?
Mrs. Cousins?
Here.
Mr. Coronado?
Here.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Here.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Here.
Mrs. Quintana?
Here.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Mr. Rodriguez will be here real shortly. That he ought to be walking in any moment.
Thank you.
And I'm here. With that, I would like to tonight thank this board. It is school board recognition night, and I, as the president of the board, would like to recognize these fine ladies and gentlemen that I work with, that work with me, making our district go so well, that you've entrusted your children to. We thank you so much that you feel that way in keeping us seated up here. Thank you for being here tonight. And I also see a veteran of the Canyatillo School District here, Mr. Charlie Hart, who was also Superintendent of the Year for the state of Texas. Mr. Hart, do you think you could lead us all in the pledge to the flag this evening? We sure appreciate that. If everybody could stand and pledge the flag. Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Honor the Texas flag. I pledge allegiance to thee, Texas, one state, under God, one and indivisible. Thank you very much. And here comes Mr. Rodriguez.
Sorry about that.
Ms. Mendoza, would you be so kind as to read our mission statement for us?
Yes, ma'am. Be happy to. Canutillo ISD will provide a quality education to assure that all students graduate on time, are prepared for higher education, or are workforce ready.
Thank you very much.
Item 2, School Board Recognition, Mr. Valdez.
Board President Sales, Board Members, and Dr. Murphy. Being a school board trustee in Texas can be a tough sell. Not only is the job a voluntary one, our trustees sign up for hours upon hours of dedication and hard work for not a single penny. But it also opens you up to criticism, lack of sleep, and premature gray hair. Year after year, though, thousands of dedicated men and women set out to help guide and govern the hundreds of school districts in our state. Being a school board member, though, does have its advantage. You help make the community better, you set a budget that hires hundreds of employees, and in Canutillo's case, you get to help set policy to educate the best children in the state of Texas. Under state decree, January each year is proclaimed as School Board Recognition Month. This year, the theme of the celebration is helping our kids shine. We figured who better to come celebrate the work done by our Canutillo School Board than the children of the school district. Board President Searles, members of the board, Dr. Murphy, could you please come down and take the seats of honor to begin our presentation? To celebrate the school board's work by having the children come and perform This year's no different. We have presentations from every one of our campus and by dozens of students. Up first, we have Bill Childress Elementary, led by Principal Elia Moreno and Assistant Principal Ms. Melendez. And music teacher Sarah Main will lead the PCE Singing Eagles Choir in a performance.
Good evening, Dr. Murphy and members of the board. At this moment, we'd like to express our gratitude for everything you do for our community and for allowing our students to shine. And Ms. Main has done a wonderful job with our choir, and it will be singing deep in the heart of Texas. And Nifty, Thrifty, 50 American States. I probably messed it up, but I apologize.
Thank you.
PCE and all the students for coming up here and performing for us. Up next, we have more music for our ears. Please welcome the Canothie Elementary School Honors Choir, led by music teacher Rick Armstrong and GT teacher Judith Vine. Principal Connie Parker, please take the floor.
Sarah, President of the School Board, Dr. Murphy, on behalf of Canothie Elementary, we want to say thank you very much for everything you do for our children. I know it's once a year that we honor you, but in reality, we should be honoring you on a daily basis for everything you all do for our campus, for our district. I know that it takes a lot of your time, personal time, to be here, to come on a monthly basis, on every 2 weeks that you all come after hours. So you put in as much time as we do as educators. And Dr. Murphy, thank you very much for everything you do for our children. So on behalf of Canothie Elementary School, I would like to introduce our Canothie Elementary Honors Choir led by Mr. Armstrong. And we were actually going to do also Deep in the Heart of Texas, but we didn't want to do that. So we changed it to two songs that the children have been practicing this week. So the first song will be our No Place for Hate song that Mr. Armstrong wrote. And then second of all, it will be our song that we sang during our Christmas performance. So I would like to introduce our Canothie Elementary Students Honors Choir.
Thank you.
said, Canothio doesn't have rhythm, right? Thank you. Thank you, Katie, for that great number. Well, the school board has placed an importance in finance education through Positives Gonzalo and Sofia Garcia Elementary School. Principal Cheryl Maxim will present a fifth grade report performance and a presentation to the board of a GES poster honoring our school board trustees.
Good evening. My name is Maxim
Garcia
and I'm the student council president of Garcia Elementary School.
Good evening. My name is Sayla Flores. I am the student council vice president of Garcia Elementary School. Tonight, we have a group of fifth grade students who would like to play a musical selection on their recorders for you. We hope you enjoy our presentation.
While they're setting that up, I just want to tell you how grateful we are for the opportunity to tell you how much we appreciate all that you do for our community. We appreciate your support of fine arts. The students tonight, the fifth graders who are playing the recorders, are also either in band or the honor choir, as well as some of them are in student council. So we appreciate all your support for fine arts and our extracurricular activities. We couldn't do it without your support, so thank you very much.
Page 26, excerpt from Symphony No. 9. Thank you.
Thank you for bringing us joy and being our shiny stars. On behalf of Garcia Elementary, we would like to thank the school board for supporting our activities and helping us come together to form a strong and successful community. You make it all possible.
Award nominated. We are very thrilled that our campus was nominated for this award and we got it. So we're recognized nationwide too, thanks to your support, okay? Thanks. Thank you for also not only allowing us to instruct our students academically, but also to allow us to feed their souls with music teachers like the ones we have, with partners and programs that include the mind and the soul of our students. Thank you, Board of Trustees.
Thank you. Good evening. We are going to be presenting two variations on the theme Twinkle Twinkle Little Stars. Thank you.
That was excellent. Thank you, Mr. Robert and Mr. Moreno, for that great performance. Well, and from elementary schools, we move on to middle schools, and from music, musical dance, we now move on to theater. From the middle school theater arts students will give us a performance entitled CMS Students Shine Brightly. They are led by Principal Dr. Monica Reyes Garcia and teachers Brenda Smith and Laura Fernandez.
Good evening. Canutio Middle School theater art students have been studying pantomime. Pantomime is a silent imitation of life. In pantomime, you can make the imaginary scene real. For example, a wall. An imaginary ball. Or an imaginary game of tug-of-war. But most of all, in pantomime, we discover how to shine.
Fabulous and awesome vision for all of us here at CISD that I can tell you there's nothing but up for us. And as long as we continue that same vision that you all are setting forth for us, there's no way that we can fail. And as you're seeing that tonight with all these kids, it's awesome. So I just want to say thank you for your awesome work. My students thank you wholeheartedly, and we just appreciate everything that you do for us each and every day, because I know it's not just here at board meetings, all the prepping and everything else that you do, the reading, the traveling, all of that. You give up your time for your family, and because you believe in us, we certainly believe in you. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Dr. Reyes. We have more actors coming up now from Adelante Middle School and the Student Council. We have a skit titled Something Good is Happening at AMS. Principal Marina Rocha, Marty Rocha, and please, your students have the floor.
Hello. Thank you, board members. While my students are getting ready, I just want to say be prepared for a fantastic skit. I'm not going to talk too long because I'm actually going to talk at the end. But here's something to tell you, that something good is happening at AMS.
Hello, I'm Stephanie Cunha, a 6th grader.
Hello, I'm Kimberly Hubert, a 7th grader.
Hello, I'm Lisa Nelson, 6th grader.
Hello, my name is Jacqueline Bassett, and I'm a 7th grader.
Hello, my name is Joshua Perez, and I'm an 8th grader.
Hello, I'm Mark McDonald, I'm 8th grader.
We are here today to walk you through the memories, events, and news that have happened this school year. It was one of the most exciting years in the history of Adelante Middle School.
But most importantly, we are here to celebrate our success due to you.
Is everyone ready to celebrate?
Are you ready?
Yes!
Let's start from the beginning. When we started school, I noticed a challenge in my classroom. Did you know that they hit a record high? We had the largest numbers of students that ever enrolled in our school.
To top it off, the economy hit us hard.
But we believe in you.
After all, we are now the Adelante Eagles.
Despite having less funds, our new principal, Ms. Rocha.
And don't forget our new assistant principal, Ms. Valdez.
Set a goal to make Adelante the best middle school in the city.
So let's face it, at the end of the day, it's up to us to come through and show them that Adelante Eagles soar.
We all had to learn that soar was a new learning philosophy for Adelante.
I remember our first day of school when Ms. Rocha told us that it's good for
sportsmanship.
As an athletes know, it's okay to cheer for our sports teams, but it's never all right to boo another school.
And boy, did we have a lot to cheer about.
Did you know that our 8th grade football team was city champs again?
Or that all 4 cross-country teams were conference champs?
We were also busy learning other things too, like that O stands for
open-minded.
At Adelante, we learned how to get along and respect everyone.
This year, Canutillo became the only school district in our region to be named a No Place for Hate district.
That means we don't tolerate bullies in our schools.
That's right, and we know that if we ever have problems, we need to report them to our new deputy, Ms. Valdez.
Do you really think she's a deputy?
I don't know, but we can always count on her to make us safe.
We also learn the reason why we come to school every day.
We know that A stands for
academics.
Are those dancing shoes you're wearing?
They sure are.
Because at Adelante, we know if we pass all of our classes, we get to go to the Pac-Man or passing all classes dance.
And we know D's are never allowed.
Finally, we all know that R at Adelante stands for
responsibility.
That's right. It's our responsibility to obey the rules, keep our school clean, and work more.
Of course, when we do all the right things, we celebrate our success.
And we have the patience to show it.
Who can forget our drill and grill to reward students who had no tardies, dress code violations, or referrals?
But another thing that makes Adelante shine is the adults at our school.
They came through for us.
We need to thank them too.
Yes, thank you to our
teachers,
counselors,
nurse,
coaches,
paraprofessionals,
cafeteria workers,
office ladies,
bus drivers,
custodians,
parents,
and central office.
And the biggest thank you to our board members. Thank you, Carolio.
Based on
lot of cool things happen this school year.
Like what?
New band instruments for students, new jerseys for football, volleyball, and basketball,
medals and ice cream pluses for all A honor roll,
bodies and certificates for AB honor roll,
robotics club and homework center,
our new choir teacher,
Coach Edwards dance class.
I won't ever forget Thriller.
And the other middle school shooter is being recognized a whole lot more.
Did you say recognized?
Yes, I did, which means...
Ta-da! AMS is a recognized school for the third year in a row.
Yeah, and while we have a lot to celebrate, we also have to think about the future.
That's right. The tax is gone, and now it's time to take the STAR and the end of course exams.
Scary!
Yes, it could be. But I'm sure we will be ready.
Because we believe in you.
That's right, and I'm sure our next week will tell us a little bit more about it.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome our new principal, Ms. Locha.
Yes, it's important to share with Ms. Valdez, our assistant principal, our deputy. Can you see why I love crossing the mountain every morning to come to the beautiful place of Alderete Middle School? And we just want to tell you on behalf of Ms. Valdez and myself, we really appreciate the trust you've given us of the responsibility of 634 students on our campus. And we are doing great things with our SOAR philosophy, and we couldn't do it without you. Thank you so much for all your trust. And we're going to show you that we're going to continue to soar. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Rocha, and thank you, AMS, for your presentation. The visual arts are not staying behind in our presentation today. If you look behind you, you can see posters from every single school in our school district honoring you and showing their talents. And each school took the theme from this year and made it their own. One special piece is being presented today by Sanfio High School Principal Jim Fry and graphics teachers Elizabeth Miranda Gutierrez. They bring with them some very talented students. Mr. Fry.
Good evening, and let me start by saying thank you for your support of our campus. We continue to exceed expectations, and it's with your support and your help that we do this. And tonight, I'll be introducing Chris Madrid and Amanda Alderete, who will be talking a little bit about the gift that's hanging here on the wall from Canyon High School. Not to steal any of their thunder, but one of the things that you have encouraged us to do and allowed us to do is continue to be innovative with the programs that we offer in order to ensure that not only are our kids ready for college, but careers as well. And one of those is through our graphic design course, which has been implemented this year and is booming and will continue to grow. So I would like to, on behalf of the staff and the students of Canyon 2 High School, I'd like to thank you all for all that you do, the hours that you put in, and many thankless duties that you perform for our campus and our district. And I know that you are here as servants of this district, of the community and this district, and I thank you for the time that you put in for our kids. So without further ado, Chris and Amanda will talk a little bit about the process.
All right. I wanted to tell you guys thank you, first of all, for deciding to get us the maps and everything. It's opened our eyes to a lot of new adventures and graphic designing, especially for giving us the photo workshop to software program and everything has like let us do whatever we want, like creating, as you see right there in the back. And I mean, thank you guys for making that decision for us, to open our eyes to like a lot of things now that I want to do in college and stuff.
Thank you as well. And as you can see, our model is Kids Shine, and we went with the different concepts to really show how kids shine in our district. These are actually pictures from the elementary. I believe it's Garcia, and we have one high school, it's the kid on the MAC, as you can see. And with this program, it's really helpful. It lets us let our imagination go wild. And most of these were done with in our creative class. And it's a great experience to be able to have these computers. And thank you for the time and efforts that you guys do.
Either cap it school board recognition celebration with a traditional silent mariachi. This year, Northwest Early College High School Principal Yvette Domina brings with her teacher Angie Morgan Thornton and the Northwest Early College High School Chamber Choir and mariachi. Ladies and gentlemen, the floor is yours and arriba Canudillo.
Board members, I just wanted to express my sincere gratitude for all of the tremendous support that you have given our school, our students, our staff. We are indebted to you and very grateful for everything that you do for us. We do have our mariachi group under the direction of Ms. Morgan Thornton, as well as our Northwest Chamber Quartet. And we do also have some members of the El Paso Community College Mariachi Real that are going to delight you with some music tonight. At this time, our student, Venecia Varela, will speak to you.
The Northwest Early College High School Chamber Quartet, founded in October 2010, has learned about the various music literacy elements, such as vocal pedagogy, choral, literature, music theory, etc. Their first public performance was in December 2010 at Canutillo High School Performing Arts Auditorium. This evening, they will be performing I'll Be There, accompanied by Mr. Adrian Zambora and under the direction of Ms. Angie Morgan Thornton. Round of applause.
Thank you.
Northwest Early College Mariachi, founded in November 2011, will perform Bebe Guizar, Viva Mexico. In a short amount of time, they have learned about the culture of mariachi music, its roots, and traditions. They will be accompanied by Mariachi Real del Paso, EBCC Mariachi, which was founded in August 2009.
Viva Griffins!
kids. Nobody had a case. Thanks, Captain. Very kind of people around here.
Board of Trustees, I'd like to thank you on behalf of Northwest Early College faculty and students. We do thank you very much.
Board agenda this evening, we have an appropriation of money to get Chelsea Mariachi in.
Viva the quartet and the mariachi! Yeah.
Thank you for inviting us. You're all doing a very good job. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Please accept a certificate on our behalf, as well as orange shirts with the district logo for you to wear with your trademark penalty of pride.
Or something. A little RSPCT.
Yeah. Oh, that was supposed to be my New Year's resolution. Oh, it's nice.
Oh, Dr. Murphy, thank you very much. These are wonderful.
Can wear it this weekend.
Steve, well, we wanted to make sure that everyone knew that our main color was
is orange.
Orange. We are
thank
orange.
You.
We bleed orange.
We do bleed orange.
Steve wants the mariachi outfit just to wear to Boston with it.
Well, I thought we were all getting the hats.
Hey, we get him one, he will wear it.
Nobody knows me in Boston.
And it won't matter if they do when you leave. I guess, Tony, that takes us to number three. God, the gang's all gone.
Crickets.
It's all lonely in here now.
Item three is superintendent's comments, Dr. Murphy.
President Searles, board members, and audience, just thank you. And I also want to add, as your superintendent, my deep thanks to your service. You know, weekends, holidays, during the workday, it doesn't matter. You guys are always there for me and for the district. And I really appreciate your leadership. And I just really want to add my voice to that. And I'm sincerely grateful for the wonderful board that we have. We are truly on our way to being an honor board this year, which we will win.
Uh-huh.
And thank you for your service. First of all, I just wanted to check in with our great thing that happened over the holiday. Hector Acosta, which has been all over the media, I'm sure you've seen some of it, rode from Canyontown Middle School to the Santa Monica Pier in Southern California, 890 miles. He had over 1,000 students pledged to pass their STAR and EOC exam, and he rode 1 kilometer for each one of those students who pledged to pass their STAR and TACS. It was regionally covered. It was also covered statewide in some of the educational blogs, and we're very proud of Hector, and we will have him to the board later this semester on his bike to accept the thanks of the board.
After his two-week rest?
Yeah. And he had some great experiences, and we had a pep rally with him coming back, and he told some wonderful stories. The one that got me was how at one point he was over in eastern Arizona, and he had to take a side road, and he wound up running out of road. And he rode 40 miles down this road and just dead end, and he had to turn around and ride all the way back.
Oh, wow.
So he doubled his miles in many cases. I do want to tell you that we're still very careful about our energy savings and our money. We did have an energy management shutdown over the holidays. We were closed from Christmas Eve through New Year's Day. And one more event that we've had to save the district money regarding energy costs. And that was a hard shutdown. No one came into the building during those days. TAS in midwinter, we are looking forward to the traditional administrator midwinter conference next week, or in 2 weeks, I guess. Very excited to let you guys know that we are presenting. Canyontown ISD was chosen as a presenter, and we are presenting our TRE and bond passage on the same day, only the second in the history of the state of Texas. And we'll be sharing with all the other superintendents and administrators in the state our great work there. And thank you for letting us go to that. Just to let you know, during January 29th through February 1st, Ms. Armendariz, Margarita, Sister Margarita, will be the lead administrator in the district as the rest of the cabinet goes over. Lastly, just a note of anticipation. As you heard tonight, Alderete did win the 8th grade city championship, a historic win, and we will have them next month in February, the entire team, to recognize them. We apologize that it's taken so long, but we appreciate them and all that they do. The last thing I just want to say, and you saw a camera up over here, I want to thank the board in our budget. We finally bought and have received a very nice HD high quality video camera to use centrally for the district. And Kim and Gustavo will have that camera, and tonight was the first night that we used it. We actually received it last week.
And is it tagged and registered?
Yes, ma'am. It's totally set, and okay. It's extremely high quality, HD compatible. And we're going to be able to start using and creating video content at a much greater level than we have in the past. So we're looking forward to that. That's it. Thank you, Ms. Searles. And again, thank you, board, for your service.
Thank you, Dr. Murphy. And Tony, I guess that takes us to four.
Yes, open forum, and we have one individual signed up to speak, Mr. Coronado.
I just want to
just mention a few things about what happened over the weekend to let you guys know that at the on Friday night at the Democratic Hall of Fame banquet, Canutillo was shown in a strong position. And so I just want to let you guys know our own Carolina Reyes was honored, and Monica Reyes Garcia, our principal at CMS, accepted on her behalf the award. It's she was inducted into the Democratic, El Paso Democratic Hall of Fame. And so that was the purpose of the banquet on Friday night. Sofia, our Gonzalo and Sofia Garcia were also mentioned and honored in the program. And our another ex-graduate and now judge, Gonzalo Garcia, his son, accepted the in memoriam at the banquet. And Nancy, our minority leader, Democratic leader, and former Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, was there. And I think some of you may have seen it in the picture in the paper on Saturday morning. And so it was really a great event. I can't tell you, just want to let you know how much Canutillo was put in the limelight, in a very, very positive light. You know, a lot of the individuals as well, even Judge Garcia recognized Carlos, an ex-graduate who's now also judge from Canutillo, Armando, and myself. He mentioned us and the rest of the district. And so we really got a big plug at the banquet. I wanted to let you guys know that what happened this last Friday. And so that's all I have.
Thank you very much, Sergio. That was nice of you to share with us.
Item 5 is introduction of TASB salary process. Ms. Carrasco.
Good evening, President Searles, board members, and Dr. Murphy. As you recall, we have contracted with TASB to do our compensation study for the upcoming school year. The data from our district has been sent over to TASB as of last week, and they are here today visiting, doing interviews starting tomorrow, and are going to start working with our data. So they stopped by wanting to visit with the board and do an introduction on this task that we're about to embark on. I'd like to introduce Ann Patton, who is the Senior Compensation Analyst, and Luz Cadena, Compensation Analyst with TASB. And they have a presentation for you this evening.
It's a pleasure to have you all here with us this evening. We look forward to your presentation.
Thank you. We are delighted to be here. What a party.
Yes.
It is preserved.
Definitely. Okay, we're going to go ahead and get started. I'd like to say again, thank you for allowing us to come and visit with you tonight. And the entertainment that we received was excellent. Thanks. Again, Ann Patton is the Senior Compensation Analyst, and she's working with me on this project. We're going to touch base a little bit on the pay system objectives. Basically, they include competitive pay rates, pay levels, to be able to recruit employees, want to pay for the job based on the job performed, the nature of the work, and also on the market. We want to provide regular pay increases that match your competitors to retain good employees. And then we also want to maintain within the resources, or stay within resources, and that is pay range maximums, to control costs. Okay? We've maintained an ongoing relationship with the district. We've started the pay study back in 2001. We have provided continued service. Pay increase cost estimates. Pay increase cost estimates. Individual job classification reviews. and also routine structure adjustments. This pay study is going to cover all district employees, will not cover the superintendent, and we will also be looking at stipends. Now, we are not going to do an extensive job evaluation. We are going to request job questionnaires from only individuals who come in jobs where we need additional information. It tends to unnecessarily upset the workforce when we request job questionnaires from anyone.
And you've already done that. Mm-hmm. We've done that here several times, so there really isn't any in doing, you know, repeating work that's already been done. We just don't think that's necessary this time.
The project activities and timelines, as Martha mentioned, the district worked diligently in providing us the employee pay data. We have that. We're going to begin the analysis. Of course, tomorrow we will begin the interviews with the management team. And then the next step will be the analysis. We'll make adjustments as needed based on market. We'll run some cost estimates. And we'll be back to the administration with some drafts.
And then we'll be back here in April. In the April-May time frame to inform the board of what we've done.
And for the market group, per the district, we did expand the market group. So we're looking at the local area as well as additional districts, same size suburban setting districts. And we're also looking at similar size and demographic school districts. Now we're going to review all data to make sure that it is appropriate and that it's not skewing data either too high or too low.
Through the chair.
Yes, sir.
President Searles, board members, these, you'll recognize some of these districts. At the start of the year, we've really set some benchmarks. In the right-hand column, these are the 10 districts in the state that look most like Kenyatta ISD. And those are some of the benchmark districts that we're comparing our AEIS data and our TATS STAR now data that we're looking at. And then on the left, on the bottom, the same size suburban, we looked at all districts across the state that are in a suburban area that are about 6,000 students, similar to ours. The only one that we did throw out was Highland Park ISD, which fits the criteria, but we just saw them as an outlier, so we tossed that. We have all the other ones, and there really aren't that many that are our size that are suburban. Those are the list. And we've been comparing ourselves on our tax scores in AEIS. You also utilize these exact same districts when you looked at my salary and my compensation package back in August. And so we think it's appropriate to also look at these same districts as you look across the district. That said, of course, we also have all of our local districts in Region 19 in El Paso County. Thank you.
We're also looking at public sources, which include third-party salary surveys, and those are purchased by TASB. We will use that data for outside of education jobs. Now, just as a side note, as we look at the data, the Houston area districts like Friendswood and Galveston and Texas City, they tend to pay high, whereas your East Texas and your South Texas tend to pay low. But we will take a look at all of those data points as we do the market.
Yeah, some of these districts are, like, the pay is regionally driven. So I would want to make sure that the data isn't skewed one way or another, either too high or too low, based on how that particular region in the state.
Montgomery ISD is exceedingly rich.
Right.
Exceedingly.
Right. But they still pay at $1.04 or $1.17, just like us.
I've done analysis for other school districts, and wealthy districts don't always pay more.
Right.
But you will take that into consideration.
We're going to be looking at outliers. I'm going to be looking to say, is this data really skewing these numbers too high or too low? Because you've got some pretty rural districts that are not Well, so we're going to take a look and make sure that the data is appropriate. That's part of what our review includes.
Okay. Thank you.
Can we look at when looking at that? I guess through the AIS, or can we see how much those districts spend per student compared to when it comes to the whole maintenance and operation budget?
Well, we actually have data on per pupil wealth, and I have information on we can get from the state through target, you know, what their target revenue numbers are. Mm-hmm. But keep in mind that who you compete for talent with is not necessarily
local.
You know, is fairly local, and so some of those numbers are not going to actually drive mm-hmm. how they pay. But we certainly can get that information and see if there's any kind of correlation.
Would the board like to see that?
I think because you all are going to present. When are y'all presenting
April.
The full?
It'll be April, May is the tentative time.
And I guess my major concern when looking at especially the local market, whether it's an Excel sheet or something, I would like to see it compared to all the districts in our region, as well as what's the high end, what's the low end, and then what's the average. So that way we could guide ourselves in saying, okay, well, if we're at the low end, let's try to look at going towards the average. But if we're at the average, across the board, then let's look at the high end, and that way we could look at ways where we could actually, whether it's through the budget process or what, but we're able to start aiming to that where we're the most competitive school district in our area. I think that's one of the major things when discussing. In the past, we have discussed that, so I don't know what is that correct.
Let me be sure I understand. As far as the high end and low end, as far as pay goes?
Yes, like let's say.
Right, we'll have all of that. We'll be able to share all of that.
And the average, so that way we could at least guide ourselves and where we want to go. Hopefully,
yes.
We're at least at the average where we could start looking at being more competitive. But if we're not even at the average, then we need to get there so we could be competitive.
Right. We will have all that information for you, and we will tell you where you're high, tell you where you're low, and tell you and recommend the areas where we think you should spend your money wisely.
Thank you.
Okay. Right.
It's important to understand why jobs or incumbents are paid high or low to the market and not have an emotional reaction to that. Highly experienced workers are those with unique skills and be paid high. And those that are new to a job may be paid low, and that's all very appropriate. It's looking at the trend, taking a look at the total picture. We also use the market data as an objective tool to make data-driven decisions and not rely on anecdotal information. We use this market data in two ways. First, it provides this snapshot of market competitiveness for current ranges. That sets the market competitive ranges for future years. And so that's how we use this market data. We got a little bit of homework, and we evaluated the teacher pay increase for the past 5 years. Looks like you've maintained a fairly constant pay level for the local market group. That's good, but there's room for improvement. We certainly need to make some adjustments. As you can see.
Can you point out an example there?
Sure. So you can see in 2006, if you take a look at the 10-year, we were at 98% of market in 2006 and 7. And the district has dropped slightly to 97% of market at the 10-year. Your 5-year, the district was at 95%, and has made a slight adjustment at 96%, but you're 4% below the market. You're $1,687, just shy of $2,000 before, below the area as far as pay at that five-year mark. The same for your zero year. You're 3% below the area market. That's $1,360. So we do need to make some improvements. Pay has been maintained, some constant comparison level, but there's room for improvement.
Thank you.
And as far as administrative, professional, and auxiliary jobs, these have a greater decline in pay. As you can see, the administrative professional was at 96% in 2006. In 2010, it is at 91%. So that has been a significant decline in pay for that group. The same for your auxiliary group. You were at 99% in 2006, and you are in 2010. This was last year. You were at 93%. Of course, when we come back, we will have market comparisons based on 2011 pay data. But you can see that there's two groups that have taken a significant decline in pay. Now, your clerical paraprofessional has leveled off. You were above market, and that group is now just 3% above market. So there has been a leveling in that group. We don't want the district employees to become, or the district itself, to become a training ground for other El Paso area school districts. We want to make sure that the talent is retained here in the district. So we want to make that pay more competitive.
Will you add into the equation benefits? That we do give benefits other districts don't give, and I think that is somewhat of an issue.
Is probably the biggest piece, and we can get information on that as well.
So that we compare apples to apples and not, oh, well, they're making a bunch of money, they get no health insurance, but we pay health insurance and maybe we're making a little lower.
We'll add in a health insurance.
Great, thank you.
That's not a problem.
So teacher pay increases, the district has provided a little lower than the other districts in the area, but somewhat close, as you can see, from 2006 to 2010. So let's maintain that constant level of pay with your local group. But when we move to the administrator pay raises and your clerical paraprofessional pay raises, you can see that this group, the raises are significantly lower, and of course in 2008 and 2010, no pay increases were provided for this group. And the same for clerical and auxiliary. So we want to assist the district by identifying where the resources are used best, most strategically. And if the cost is high, we could certainly model a multi-year implementation. But we can model any type of pay increase scenarios that would fit the district's financial resources. We look forward to working with the district. We're excited to be back, and we will be reporting back to you with results.
And also, please remember that between now and April, our office here will be working closely with them and providing information, and that local verification component will be done also.
Very good. And are there any questions about process, procedures?
I do.
Yes.
When you come with these percentages and these figures, are you taking in general group? Are you taking tenured teachers, new teachers? What level are you basing it off of?
Well,
when we do the market comparison, when we bring back the market for teacher pay, we will provide how the district's pay compares at each five-year interval, 0, 5, 10, 15, and 20 year. And we'll have a median of the pay based on the district's local and then the other subset of districts that we're using as comparison. We'll have that information.
So you're doing a range, like zero, like you said, 0 to 5, 5 to 10,
we'll be looking at five-year increments, and then we'll compare what the district pays to what the median of the other districts are paying and see if there needs to be improvement at different levels. And at this point, we really just don't know. Mm-hmm. But, for example, if we found that the 10-year teachers or the zero-year teachers were lagging, we might recommend that you make some improvements at different parts of the schedule just depending on how you compare to the market. So we'll be making recommendations for those that are too low. We might recommend additional increases for them. And we will have line items for that so you'll know exactly how much is it going to cost to provide increases for different types of jobs.
Okay. That's all for me. Thank you.
Will there be any, I hate to muddy the water, but, you know, just maybe it'll clarify. We have employees that have worked, will seniority, I guess, come into play anywhere? You know, some employees have worked a long time. Maybe they haven't moved up the ladder. They've stayed where they are, but they've been there, so obviously their skills are enhanced, their experience is invaluable. Will that be taken into consideration with a rate?
We are looking at internal equity issues, and so we have obtained the district staff. They worked very hard in providing us the employee pay data to reflect years of experience in the job to assist us in that process.
Great. Thank you very much.
Yes.
And maybe this is for Mrs. Carrasco. I know that I'm sure that some of the employees are aware that we're going to be conducting the salary study. Are we doing anything to ease the pain or anxiety? Or I know, and I was here when you all came before, and in the clerical field, in the clerical staff, we had a lot of anxiety. Are we doing anything to alleviate or to ease some of the employees, maybe when the salary studies do come out, or?
What I've done is we've discussed this at leadership one, and so at leadership, of course, you know, the expectation is that the principals and directors, you know, carry that information forward to their staff. However, you know, we have wanted this process to be as transparent as possible, and I have my doors are open for anybody that has had questions regarding their pay. And I know that I have had a couple of teachers come by with questions that we've been able to answer, and of course have told them that, you know, as the pay study is being implemented and as questions arise, maybe from employees that have come forth to the office, I've passed on that information to TASB, you know, what about this, and take a look at this, and you know, I've had there were some teachers that came down that said that they had looked at what other districts were doing. I took that information. And as far as the clerical staff, it really maybe just a couple of people that have come by and asked questions. But, of course, I mean, we're open to any questions that people may have about their pay, you know, issues, questions, anything we've addressed as they have come up.
It's maybe because the last time all of us were asked to fill out a questionnaire, and we're not doing that this time. So maybe it won't be as great.
And actually, we have done. They've requested org charts for each one of the different areas and campuses. We do have representation for each one of the groups, and so those are the ones that will be being interviewed.
I was just going to clarify also to Ms. Searle, your question, or Patsy's question. The board has directed that our administration take TASB's recommendations and also do our own verification process. So this level of anxiety that might exist that, you know, big TASB's coming in from Austin and just going to tell us, we appreciate that. And actually, we have a high level of trust, but at the same time, we're going to trust but verify. And I've talked to Martha. We're going to verify as many data points as we possibly can, double check and triple checking to make sure we have the figures right. And that's from board direction to us. We're going with that. That should help a little bit as well.
Yes, please.
Was that it, Ms.
Miller? That was it.
Just one of the things that we have discussed, and I don't know if it's taken into consideration or if it's part of the process, but we had discussed sort of like what we do with our health benefits, where we have a diverse group of individuals, where you present the plan to them as well, and they're able to ask questions, you know, under organizational behavior. And when you study that, how is it that we could, you know, address all the issues and make sure that it's addressed at the bottom level all the way to the top, so that way there's a buy-in when this gets implemented and it's not just something that just came across and, you know, it's being implemented and some people don't understand it.
We have done presentations to employee groups in the past.
We have done that. We can provide you with communication tools, frequently asked questions, presentations. I've done a variety of different things depending on how you all want to do this. I mean, we've done roundtable discussions, we've done after school, you know, meet and greet type question and answer sessions. It's been handled in a variety of different ways. So however you all want to communicate, we will assist you any way you need to communicate with your staff. Because we're not doing the big questionnaire thing, this process is a lot less invasive, and you know, it's market analysis, and there possibly could be some reclassifications only based on what the market's showing. So this is a little bit less, this process creates a whole lot less anxiety with the employee population. We really are sensitive to that and want to, you know, help you solve problems and not come in here and create mm-hmm. problems for you. So whatever assistance that you need as far as simple communication pieces, we will be happy to assist you.
And what I would like to see is more like a public hearing. I don't know if like the rest of the board would feel, just to maybe if it's, you know, an elementary one, a middle school one or something throughout the day, but something where that way if any questions arise, those could be addressed before it comes to the board, and that way it's sort of the buy-in as well as, you know, you all had your opportunity to address those questions.
And that would be something that as we go move down the road the information is gathered and we're putting together schedules, and as we're looking at the data, at that point then internally we could probably arrange some type of meetings with the different employee groups. If it comes to that, we could do that.
Okay. But I would like to see it, so, and I don't know if the rest of the board feels okay, but if it's something we could look at and then it could be presented to us later.
When you say public meeting, do you mean board or administration meets
with the stakeholders? We all, you know, make sure that the stakeholders are all aware and that they have the buy-in to
had some comments on. So after we get the data back from TASB and we have done our verification, then we, before we bring it to you, we take it to a stakeholders group, maybe multiple stakeholders groups.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
So the rest of the board good with that? Everybody's happy about that.
Okay.
It's fine.
I have another question.
Yes.
I don't recall being asked, or this is just clarification. How do you determine if you need more info on a job description, or how do you...
I'm sorry, what?
How do you determine if you need more info on a job description, or how do you select when you're going to interview someone?
We are interviewing management team right now, so that we understand the processes and we get an idea about what the jobs are doing. We get copies of the job descriptions. And then if we still have questions or we still need further clarification, We will have some questionnaires filled out. Anybody who wants to fill out a questionnaire is more than welcome to fill one out if they really, really want to. It's a 7-page questionnaire, so it's not something people are just usually delighted to do. But we have, you know, years and years and years of expertise, and so we can read these job descriptions and get an idea of what these jobs are doing. But there's still, sometimes I still need more clarification, and if I need more information, then I'll ask for a questionnaire. Okay.
All right. Thanks.
But if anyone wants to fill one out.
Well, no, I'm aware of what that job description, what the questionnaire entails, but I've also seen what other people can do to get a motion or increase, too, unfortunately. Thank you.
Do you feel satisfied? Okay. Any other questions, comments, concerns? I guess we'll see you in March or April, hopefully with the wonderful compensation plan to help all our employees.
We will do our very best.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. So this means a lot to us.
April or May.
April or May? Okay.
Give us time.
Okay, absolutely. Sorry, I didn't mean to be rushed.
Thank you, y'all.
Thank you. We'll be able to get some more money from the state, right, by then?
Oh, we will.
The money tree that's in my bag.
Just fill up your purse with it before you come. That takes us, Tony, to...
Item 5B is the AEIS report. Mr. Warren.
Thank you, President Searles, board members, and Dr. Murphy for allowing me to present the 2011 AEIS report this evening. This presentation is meant to satisfy the need for a public hearing to discuss the 2010 performance report as it is required by the Texas Education Code, Section 39.053. After tonight's meeting, the 2010-11 AEIS report will be posted on our website under the district information link under the student performance link. And we will also keep a copy here on file at the ISD with Gustavo, and it is my understanding that it will also be disseminated with two of these to every campus, one to be held in the office and one to be held at the library of every campus. Is it okay if I start with that?
There he is, right there.
Sorry. They're leaving to go back to Austin, so I either had to make my point then or hold my peace.
Okay.
So I'd like to begin with the first slide, which talks about data quality indicators for October 2010. And the first area is the PID error rate. PID stands for Personal Identification Database. And that what this deals with is the PIMS data quality indicators for 2010. The PID system matches information throughout the state each time it is collected. So every year we collect the data, we submit it up to PIMS. And if the student is enrolled somewhere else with the same PIMS number, but the information is off, like if the date of birth looks different or the spelling of the name is incorrect, it will result in a PID error. And then both parties, whether it be within the same district or throughout the state of Texas, they'll be notified, and until it is rectified, it will result in a PID error for both parties until it's been rectified. So we've stayed pretty consistent here at 1/10 of a percentage point. Pretty much just along the same thing as with the state. For the underreported student leavers portion, that monitors students in grades 7 through 12 for the previous school year to see where they are. If they leave our district, we need to report that they have left and why. We don't have to report if they leave for a GED or if they enrolled in another school in Texas, but any other time, we do have to report that. And we are still at 0.1% there as well. And I believe this has been consistent for the last 4 years that I've checked. And this is a testimony to Lila and her group because they do a really good job just making sure that everything checks and balances. So I want to give them props. The next slide deals with student demographics. In comparison to the state, we have a different profile. We are at 45 percentage points higher in the Hispanic population than the state, 19 percentage points higher in the economically disadvantaged population, 13 percentage points higher in our LEP population, and 15 percentage points higher in our at-risk population. Is that okay, Tony? As we go through this presentation, I'd like to ask the board to please keep in mind our high at-risk and economically disadvantaged population as it compares with the state. When we look at what our district accomplishes, it is a testimony to the hard work and dedication of our campus.
Chair.
Yes.
President, I do want to point out the bottom number at-risk, 61%, which is up 5.3. That looks like, whoa, wait a minute, where did all these new at-risk kids come from? I can attest to you that we did not get more at-risk kids. That increase is actually positive in the sense that that represents the great effort of Ms. Brigham and the Clearinghouse team to get the forms in from the parents, the at-risk and the federal forms, that identify those kids, and then that brings more money into the district. So that plus 5.3 is actually very positive in that it really isn't more bodies, but it's more money.
Thank you, Dr. Murphy.
I'll continue on to the next slide, which deals with program enrollments. And compared to the state, KAMTUISD reported a greater percentage of students in the bilingual ESL program and career technology program. KAMTUISD also reported a smaller percentage of special ed students. So we're at 19 percentage points higher in bilingual ESL, 2 percentage points lower in GT, which when we talked in the DAC, I think they were wanting to address that sometime soon, Dr. Murphy. 1 percentage point less in special ed than the state, and we are 13 percentage points higher in our career tech than the state.
And I think that's a critical point, President and board members. A board goal is to increase CATE. We're up 6% over last year, and we are 13% higher than the state average. So that's just fantastic. Two years ago, we did not believe we were going to be there, and we're there. So.
Yeah.
And we're still moving forward on it.
The next slide deals with tax passing rates. This is the first of three TA-based indicators used to determine ratings under the 2010 accountability rating system. And we were at 87%. Well, anywhere that we had an increase, I showed it. And if there was no increase, I didn't indicate it at all. So you can see that we were at 87 percentage points for reading, 83 for math, 93 for writing, 79 for science, but we were still up by 4 percentage points there, and social studies at 95%. And as we prepare for the upcoming STAR, it's encouraging to see the progress the county made in comparison to the rest of the state. And I was making the comment at the DAC meeting that if we had 2 more years of tax, I think that we probably would have reached exemplary, honestly, if we looked at the trajectory that we were on. The next slide deals with the tax passing rates for prior year failures. And this represents the percentage of students who failed tax in 2010 that tried again in 2011 and passed. CISD outpaced the state in both reading and math in this area. We had, of the students who failed tax reading in 2010, 51% passed in 2011. And of the students who failed tax math in 2010, 46% passed in 2011. Again, those are all positive increases for the previous year. The next slide deals with tax commended performance. And this slide represents the percentage of examinees that scored at or above the commended standard of 30% or more. All students and all student subgroups were evaluated with the exception of the African American demographic. And it does take into consideration it's the sum of all grades, but does not include tax M or tax ALT. A commended score on tax varies slightly each year and typically represents 90 to 95% correct answer score on the tax exam. Gold performance acknowledgments are awarded when 30% or more of the students in every student group is commended on tax. And in this case, 2011, KAMTUISD received a commended status on social studies.
And I'd also like to point out that in science and social studies, our gains, 4 points and 5 points, outpaced the state in both areas. It's sort of doubled the state gain. The next slide deals with exit level tax pass rates. This indicator shows the percent of students who first took the tax exit level test in the spring of 2010 and eventually passed all tests taken in the same district. So they had 4 retest opportunities for exit level tax before graduation. And this represents a cumulative pass rate difference between the class of 2010 and the class of 2011. Again, we're up by 4 percentage points from the previous year. The next slide, I put in your packet, and then I thought I kind of need to explain it a little bit more, because when you look at it, it's just kind of creepy as a slide in itself. So it deals with violent or criminal incidents at CISD. And this is required that we have to present this during this meeting. So I kind of want to give you an idea, because when you look at it on the outset, you said, wow, what are all these things that are happening? And basically what it breaks down to is for... It was a report from Ms. Arbundantes' group by District Wadis that tells us a criminal, and it's a report called the Criminal and Substance Abuse Incidents for 2010-2011. And for these are the 4 breakdowns. Possession of controlled substance, AMS had 1, CMS had 1, and CHS had 30. These are reported incidents. Possession of or use of alcoholic beverage, CMS had 1 incident. Possession or use of cigarette or tobacco, CHS had 1 incident. So these are reported incidents. And then finally, there's one that is felony offenses that were not even committed on the school or on the school premises, but they were reported, and so we do have to report those. Yes, ma'am.
I have a question.
Sure.
You said reported. Reported to?
From my understanding, it is like, let's take, for example, the high school level, Mr. Hadabi. There was, they found a controlled substance, he went, he got it, and he came back, and then he filed a report that said this happened. So these were actually things that were reported.
Reported to whom? To the authorities? Does it have to be a minimum, a maximum?
I don't know if they were reported to the authorities. I would assume they were, because I know that every time I talked to Mr. Adabi when we were doing testing, he said, I'll call you back because I got to go talk to the police for this incident. But I can verify that for you and get back to you if that's okay.
It's on PEEMS. It's what they have to do. It's a PEEMS. Once it's, so we can have things that are reported here and then they're not reported to the police. That's what some of the things are saying. But some of the things, it depends on under the Texas Education Code, what is reportable, and a lot of the things that, you know, especially the bullying, reports beyond that, the hypertexting and things like that, we have to report it to teams, and this is a report that my belief is that we pull it from the teams.
Right, I understand that, but that's what I'm saying. I think it has to be reported to the...
Most of the times, almost all of the reports do go from, they do get reported to the civil authorities, in some cases it doesn't. Anything like the bullying,
even if
that's some things, it's still, it's
called
just
the controlled substances are all
reported.
Police reports. And alcoholic beverage, I'm sure.
And alcoholic beverage. Cigarettes would not be, but you know, see, so that would be one of the instances that it would be reported to teams, but not to the authorities.
And I want to make a comment, if I may. The increase at the high school, please don't see that as a total negative. We hired, at the beginning of the 2010-11 school year, Muhammad Adabe to be our mainline AP discipline. And he really has upgraded that job. And he was, to use the term, he was busting kids left and right that should have been busted in years past but hadn't been. And by him upgrading that AP discipline position at the high school, which everybody agrees he's really done, we've seen an increase in reporting. So it isn't that, oh goodness, we've had this sudden spike in marijuana use at the high school. It's, oh goodness, we have an AP who's finally getting after it and busting many more of the things. So I think that is a factor that really needs to be looked at there.
And that's given Mr. Adabi's past too, because he was an air marshal. He's been in law enforcement, so he's kind of got that mentality. He's like hanging out with my brother. It's like, I can't do anything. The next slide deals with the Student Success Initiative for Academic Standards for Promotion. Student Success Initiative allows students in grades 5 and 8 to retest if they did not pass the tax during the first administration. And our gains are still very close to the state norm, with the second test administration really being the test that helps pull the students across the finish line. So looking at 80s during the first admin, second administration of the test is usually a lot higher. I guess they could get all the kinks worked out. The next slide deals with annual dropout rates. This slide represents the annual dropout rates for grades 7 and 8 independently from grades 9 through 12 and is based solely on the 2009-10 school year. So 7 and 8 are used in the state accountability system and represent the base indicator number 2. The state sets the acceptable rate at 1.8% or less. Grades 9 through 12 are used to evaluate your overarching goals. And let's see where I'm at here, sorry. And you'll notice that while it is high at 3.3 percentage points, it is still 2.5 percentage points lower than it was the previous year. And that decline could be attributed to aggressive high school recovery intervention, as well as a Saturday dropout recovery effort that you guys did last September, that's correct?
Last two Septembers.
The next slide deals with completion and student status rates for the class of 2010. And our graduation rate is up, and so I have been able to kind of look back, and I got this really nice thing that lets me look at AIS reports. As a data geek, it's very exciting to me, so let me share some of that. Our graduation rate is at 79%, it's up 7.8 percentage points from the previous year. Last year we were at 71.2. The year prior to that we were at 65.9, and the year prior to that we were at 59%. So that is fantastic. The other item that I'd like to point out here is our dropout rate is down. We had this thing in 2006-2007, we were at 15% dropout rate. 2008, we were at 23%, so it was a huge spike. Then a slight drop in 2009 to 22%. And then 2009-2010, it was at 21. Now we're at 14, so I think if it continues to go in that direction, you doing okay? The next slide deals with attendance rates. This slide represents the total number of days present divided by the total number of days in membership. With the gold performance acknowledgement set at 96%, the district just missed a gold performance acknowledgement in attendance rates by 1 percentage point. And that was what happened last year as well.
Right, we had the ironic situation of the last 2 years we had the exact same attendance rate. 95 point whatever it was, it's same exact 2 years in a row. We're trying to move off that mark this year. So we're good, but we want to hit that 96 minimum.
The last slides of my presentation this evening will deal with the college readiness performance indicators that are also a part of the AIS report. And the first one would be that we'll discuss would be advanced course and dual enrollment for the class of 2010. And this slide shows how many of our students are completing courses in AP dual enrollment. We are 3 percentage points greater than the state. But I also included last year's to show you that last year we were 3% under the state. We were at 22 and the state was at 25. This year we're at 29 and the state's at 26. So I think probably the expecting call from the state test is going down. The next slide deals with the recommended high school and DAP graduation program. And this is the second area that distinguished achievement program. This here's the second area that Kennedy TOISD received a gold performance acknowledgement. The state requires 85% or more, and we surpassed the state by 10%.
That was great.
Those are the two areas. The next slide deals with advanced placement. This represents 15% or more of the 11th and 12th graders taking at least one AP course. The examinees passing represent the 50% or more of the 11th and 12th grade examinees scoring at or above the criteria with the 3 and above.
And through the chair, this generated a lot of discussion at DAC. And what we discovered at DAC was KU2 ISD, due to our demographics, is allowed to access grants to where all students who desire to take AP exams take it for free. And basically what happens, because that's the case, is the teachers basically make the taking of the exams mandatory. And so if you take an AP class in KU2, you're going to take the AP exam. Whereas a district maybe like El Paso, where they don't have every kid gets it for free, only the kids that are more motivated take the test. And so that equals this disparity, because we make them all take it so our pass rate is lower. You know, it's kind of like a deal with the devil, and they get to take it, but then in the end, our grades are a bit lower. So this is an area where we still want to improve, but there is a pretty good explanation as to why it's lower. I do appreciate that we're fairly close on the state as far as who percentage of students taking the AP. Although we certainly can increase that as well.
I think, if I might.
Yes.
Just one of the things, I know it's the same thing like Isleta when they started taking all the SAT, ACT, and you saw that dip, but at the end, what we need to look at is trying to increase the rigor of that that program, so that way we're able to get not just more people taking it, but you have more people passing it, and that's something that we need to look at.
And that's exactly what DAC was saying as well.
Ms. Searles?
Yeah. Yes.
Also, I want to note that you're seeing kids pass the class with high marks, but not the exam. And I've had this discussion with Ms. Fierro several times because it doesn't make sense. How can kids be getting A's, but they're not passing the test, or not even coming close?
You know, the only thing I can tell you on that is, first of all, amen. But second of all, I was an AP teacher for 3 years in San Antonio. And I had kids all the time that got A's in my class and failed the AP test. It's certainly not something that's singular to our district. It's nationwide that happens. But the point is well taken that we have some room to grow. We did point out in red that although the state average is 51% passage, here at Region 19 it's only 34, which still we have room to grow. But that is the benchmark that I'm after, at least initially.
Okay.
The next slide deals with college admission testing. For goal performance acknowledgement, we needed to have at least 70% of our grads taking the SAT or ACT, and 40% or more at or above the criterion. But like when you look at it, and it shows that we don't really have that many testing in comparison to the state, believe that the reason for that is a high portion of our students in El Paso opt to take the ACCUPLACER rather than SAT or ACT, because that's really what's required to get into the EPCC or UTEP. And when I worked at UTEP and I worked for the CERT research department, that was consistent too. I mean, a lot of the kids just end up taking ACCUPLACER and getting placed in. But the high school did provide me with some race to the finish data, so I provided just a little information underneath that. The race to the finish data provided from CHS indicates that over 50% of our students tested in the SAT and 26% in the ACT in 2011. So we're hoping that this has some sort of impact next year when we get the results. We won't know officially, though, what those results are, because unless they're testing or seated and testing at the campus, we have to wait for the results to come in.
Our district initiative that was based on board goals, where we wanted every kid to take a college entrance exam, started with the class of 2011. This data is class of 2010. So the next time John comes with us, we're going to see a much higher number.
Yes, sir.
Hopefully much higher,
Dr. Murphy. Well, we know that they met their goal that every high school senior who graduated last year did take a college entrance exam.
Great.
last year. So it's just got to wait for that data to get processed through the state.
Ms. Custers?
I just want to know, where are we at on that as far as are our kids still all eligible with a waiver or no?
Waiver.
For the fee.
For the exam, for the fee.
SAT.
Yes.
All of them.
Well.
Like two for SAT, one for ACT?
Well, I'll get back by me. I don't want to misspeak. Cabinet, do we know that? Do we need to check on it?
We got some waivers for the 10th grade. This year we didn't get them for the 8th grade. So.
But when juniors and seniors want to take it, they do get, isn't it two for SAT yeah. and one for ACT? Or it used to be, I mean.
Yes, it was.
Do you know what it is now?
All the students at Northwest, we've been just allowing them to take it because they have free and easy lunch, and we've been able to do it.
So we'll get a report in Friday packet on that. I don't know exactly.
Yes, for sure.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, Mr. Coronado?
And the other issue I have is why isn't the ACCUPLACER included in the admissions testing by the AEIS? Why isn't the state allowing it?
Good question. I can find out.
Why doesn't the state allow the ACCUPLACER as a college admissions testing?
Because I think out of the universities, all the universities in Texas, you have to either take one or the other as an entrance. And the ACCUPLACER is just to place you at that.
It's a placement test. Where do you need remedial courses, or will you place directly into a college level course? And then we also have the Texas Success Initiative that most community colleges and universities accept in Texas. If you score a 2200 on the MAP for exit level and a 2200 on the ELA with a 3 or 4 in writing, then you can forego the ACCUPLACER and automatically be entered into college level courses. But the ACCUPLACER it's a placement test, right, not necessarily an entrance exam.
And next question I have is, why don't we just roll that up into one test? Why all this
hoopla?
Can't the ACT and ACT get it together and say, hey, why don't we, part of our deal where we're testing is to see where do they really belong?
Actually, there is a certain score you can achieve on those exams to forego the ACCUPLACER.
To forego it, yeah, but with the actual results, I mean, the ACT actually gives you scores for the different subjects.
And if you score a certain score on those, then you don't have to take the ACCUPLACER.
Mm-hmm. But if you know that, they can't tell you what you need. That's why you need the ACCUPLACER.
Yes, it'll tell you if you need to be placed, for example, on math in a remedial math course before you can be successful.
Or which one?
Right. It won't tell you. Yes, exactly which one. It's an adaptive test. What level you need to start at.
Why don't we just do an ACCUPLACER that covers everything? Replace the ACT and ACT for that.
I'll get right on that.
I think.
Could you please have that in the Friday packet, Dr. Murphy?
It's like
add it to your overarching goals.
Test again.
It's two businesses. SAT's one, and they have ACT.
I hear you, but higher ed isn't.
Everybody wants to make some.
No, I know, but that.
Higher ed needs to get its act together. Just like the same thing when they, you know, their dropout rate is horrendous. Yeah. And they weren't doing anything about it. And our commissioner of higher education wasn't doing it. They were criticizing public education that we had a horrible dropout rate and wanted more money for themselves when they weren't doing their job. Okay.
Please continue.
just real quick, I have something just on that, the ACCUPLACER, and just to go back a little bit on what I think UTEP was looking at doing, because I was talking to the academic, not the advising, the director of the admissions, is they were looking at getting, you know, just not having the ACCUPLACER, I mean the SAT or ACT because it's not necessarily a level of whether you're going to graduate. Each one has separate indication of the content, and the other ones, are you going to succeed, sort of type. And so there's been discussion of getting rid of it, but I'm sure, you know, the business side of it and the lobbying side of, you know, the higher ed is something to look at. But on the ACCUPLACER, what I would like to see is, and I don't know if we could get this, or maybe with better communications with UTEP or EPCC, is how are our students doing when taking that ACCUPLACER to see how much remedial coursework they are taking, so that way we could work on closing the gap. Because I think that's the only communication we have, or the ability to, you know, make sure our students are prepared for higher ed, is through ACCUPLACER and where they place them. And if we're able to close the gap of those students that are going to higher ed, by seeing how many students are taking, whether it's a 011 or something below that, how is it that we could close those gaps, whether it's math? Because I think the test, right, it's math, English, writing, and that's pretty much it. Is there science?
I believe it's the math.
I don't think there's science, but that way we could see it. What is it that we need to do at our level to hopefully close those gaps? So I don't know if we could look at that.
Yeah, I could talk to Dr. Matthew at UTEP. I used to work with him, and I also helped them develop an online website that reports that by district, but it does it by percentage, not by actual student. Were you interested in doing that by student, or just kind of as an overview right now?
Well, maybe as an overview right now, but looking at, you know, if it is student-based, what is it? Maybe we could single it to the teacher that they're taking, and might, you know, looking at that data.
Yeah, I can absolutely. Yeah.
And at a general level, there's also the Texas Pathways project that we can participate in, several of the districts in the region. So not only are we comparing to how our students are doing, you know, compared to their state assessment scores, their ACCUPLACER scores, but also compared to other districts, how everybody in the region is doing, so we can support each other with that. So that's something that we can become a part of.
That's all I have for right now.
Thank you.
Yes, and get that for you. Search helps. Two more slides to go.
We're almost there.
Okay. The next slide deals with the Texas Success Initiative. This indicator is another goal, state goal performance acknowledgement indicator. We would need the TSIC to have 65% or more of grades 11 scoring at 2200 or higher. The standard set by the state of by the Texas Higher Education Coordinating Board is a TAC scale score of 2200 in math and ELA with a 3 or 4 on the writing component, which is exactly what Pam just told you guys. 53% up 13% from last year, and math at 51% up 10%. I know that it's still not reaching where we wanted the state, but with gains like that, like I was telling Dr. Murphy, you could have just had tax just 2 more years, I think it would have been great. And then the final slide is the college readiness graduates for class of 2010. And at college ready is, in this calculation, counts graduates who exceeded the college ready criteria on at least one of the 3 tests, exit level tax, SAT or ACT. And this probably isn't the like highlight slide to lead out on, since we're not as great as the state right now, but there's still improvement, up 5 percentage points for ELA, up 2 percentage points for math, and up 6 percentage points for both subjects combined. Now I'll open it up to any questions or...
Are there any questions of Mr. Warren about our AEIS report? Any from the public or here for the public forum? No? Hearing none, thank you. Mr. Warren, thank you very much. You've broken this down into a very easy read, actually.
And if it's okay with the board, I'd like to ask you all a question. Would you all prefer next time when I present to you, do you guys like graphs or bar charts? Or because I'm very comfortable doing it this way, but if there's anything that you guys need to do.
This is good with me.
It's fine.
Okay.
Can we compare apples to apples and oranges to apples?
I can do that too. Thank you guys for your time. Have a good evening.
Thank you very much.
Good job, John. Good job, Candy TOISD. I think this is a fantastic AEIS report. Gains in almost every area. We still have a way to go, but certainly a positive report. So thank you.
Thank you. And Dr. Murphy, I don't see any action here for that. We don't need to accept it. Okay, thank you. And that brings us, Tony, to C.
Central office water damage, air quality testing process, and financial services renovation. Mr. Armendariz and Mr. Gonzalez.
Good evening, Board President Searles, Board Members, Dr. Murphy. The reports on C, 5C are a combination of central office water damage, air quality testing process, and the financial services renovation. The first one, your Friday packet, you should have received pictures, photographs of the damage along with some narrative regarding the report that I put together. Just give you a little brief, just start you off as to how I came across it. I came in to do a check on the remodel at Finance on January 2nd, because I figured nobody was going to be around. And when came to check to see how they were doing, to see if I could do some punch listing on it. And when I opened the door to set the alarm, I kept hearing kind of like a waterfall. And I didn't think much about it, and I didn't realize that I was standing in water. And so as I turned off the alarm, I proceeded to go into the lobby and recognized that I was slushing through water. It was pretty surprising, and I quickly ran out and went to shut off the main. Not knowing exactly where it was, my biggest concern was that the water was headed towards the IT room, and that would have caused quite a bit of damage. It would have shut down the system. And as soon as I was able to shut that off, I came in to find out where it was coming and what the problem was. Found out it was coming from the bathroom, so I made a natural assumption that it was due to some problems that a previous contractor had worked on, and I quickly called them and said, hey, I want you to come over here. I need to find out if it was you guys, and if not, I just want you to come in and make an assessment. At the same time, I proceeded to notify Dr. Murphy and the staff that was affected as I was walking around the building to check to see where the damage was, and came to realize that most of the damage was in Tony Blaze's office and Annette's IT office. I was perplexed as to why we had flood damage, especially if it was coming from above the ceiling, and the water was actually shooting towards those two directions. It didn't make any sense to me. When the plumber showed up, probably about maybe half an hour later, because they had to wake up a lot of people too. I called our maintenance people, talked to Pablo and asked him if he could send some people over. And I'm sure he tried real hard to work up people and to get a hold of people. I in turn got a hold of one of our maintenance guys. He came over to give me a hand. Then my immediate thought was, I've got an issue here where I've got water, and I know if I let it sit for any longer, not long, I don't know how long this was going on, that if I let it sit any longer, it's going to seep up the walls, and then I'm going to have a greater problem. I'm going to have a situation where we have to dry out the walls or actually cut the walls to air mount. So it just so happened that 4 weeks ago, before we went out on vacation, the people from Servpro had come to visit my office. I don't think they had anything to do with this, but you know, they just came and visited my office, left some literature, and I had one of their pens, so I dialed away. And they had left some pens there at the office, and I called them up. Then I proceeded to get a hold of an electrician to see if I could, you know, just in case I needed someone. We couldn't get our electrician from the district in there, and I tried to call the plumber. The plumber was out of town. Our plumber was out of town. By that time, the people from the contractor showed up. They looked at it. We noticed that the problem was coming from the piping closest to the fire, to the water heater, where they had done some work. What we went to did is, in order to ascertain where the problem was, we went and turned on the water again with one of his personnel sitting, standing by the water to check to see where the leak was, because it was difficult. Everything was wet around there. Well, apparently, according to the photographs, I moved real fast. You have these in your packet, but I'll go over to the You see the little arrow, or the top arrow on the second picture, where it's pointing to a relief valve? That's where the water was coming from. The work that they had done was in this area right here, and this area, because they were connecting the water heat. The problem arose up here, and I couldn't understand how it would have happened. This is the first time really that I've seen this happen as far as a relief valve giving way. But it didn't pop all the way out. It just, if you can imagine you holding a water hose and you put in your finger and you see how water shoots out, it ends, that's exactly what it was doing. It was shooting, it was going directly, shooting straight at Tony's office and straight at Annette's office. And so I couldn't understand why we created such a flood, why there was such a flood. When we got off, I said, I don't understand how we flooded the whole area. As we're walking out, water was coming out of the drinking fountain. Apparently, a line in the drinking fountain had leaked, or had come loose, or whatever. I said, water was coming from there. I can only estimate that maybe this water was running for, I guess, early morning, 6 o'clock, because I did call Sound Control, and I asked them if they had reported this. Because normally they have the ability to listen to some of the sounds, and all I can figure is that it happened between their switchover time, which is between 5 and 6 o'clock when the night crew leaves, because they told me that no one had reported this to us. I know that we looked at the drinking fountain. I know that our plumber and I went out there to look at the drinking fountain to see if it came from the expansion tank or a water line. He couldn't, as far as he could see, he noticed where it was coming from. It was coming from a small tube that connects there's a ring, a refrigerant system. So it was coming from there, the leak was coming from there, and what I did is by that time, around 10:30, I believe, or 11 o'clock, Servpro showed up and they started putting their high vacuums. They had to call in another truck to come in and suck up the water as fast as possible so that it wouldn't seep through. In the process, we found out that we did have a lot of water go between the walls and appear into other areas. And I think if you look at your, this is the restroom area, but if we go back down the hallway, water just traveled all the way up to very close to finance, where we have this corridor on this end right here. And it was making its way into the IT room. Fortunately, it didn't get close to it. Not all the offices got wet. I know that human resources did, and that's largely because of the unevenness of the concrete floor. It seems like it's leaning towards the boardroom. So most of the water was moving in between the walls at the boardroom and some of the offices there. That's the ceiling and the restroom area. That's the water fountain right here that we're talking about. We have it there right at that point. That's where it's dripping as we shut off the water. This is the shot of the superintendent's office, the main entrance, the waiting area, where the water was reaching between Tony's space and the waiting area. That's Dr. Murphy's office. The pictures are not very good. They don't really show, as you can see right here, the reflection of the light right at that point. That's water just on top of the carpet. That's Dr. Murphy's conference room right there, the conference table. That's his office. It reached almost the exterior wall. It was going that way. Part of his, it didn't go into the conference room, the superintendent's conference room. Another shot of Tony's office. Fortunately for us, the records room did not get wet. That's Annette's IT office. Right there, she got most of that's the computer lab, and that's the conference room. We did attach to these what were cost estimates of the cost that we went through. They have not been checked by me. They have not been checked by anyone. We just asked them for numbers right away so that we could have it for this board meeting. So we kind of put it together. I've been going through them. I know that Mike has been too, and we do have some questions on some of them. Some numbers don't match up, so I know that the number's going to come down a lot more. But one of the good things is that I know that the adjuster came in, and Mike has talked to that more than I can, and they had roughly estimated somewhere between the neighborhood of about $47,000 to $50,000 loss. On this, that was their figure estimate, and I think in the very front you can see where there were like four companies that I did bring in so that I could act on this right away. I did bring in some carpet because some of the carpet that we had in this office is jute back; it's residential carpet, and that carpet would have gotten moldy. That's in Kate's office, their CTE office. That's residential carpet. And if we had left it there, I know it would have eventually molded. We did remove that. We removed the VCT that was underneath that, and then we put in this new carpet pile. Throughout the corridors, they went ahead, and we have more pictures. I have well over 100 pictures of this that I could make on the board and the CD if that's what you wish. They went ahead and removed all the base. And what they did is they started drilling holes so that they could, they were wondering why it was not drying so fast enough. And when they drilled the holes, they found out that there's a lot of insulation in between the walls. So the insulation, why I don't know, but all the walls have an insulation on it. The insulation was saturated, so it was holding water. And as you know, it wicks up, you know, so fortunately we stopped it. So that was the difficulty on it. They wanted me to remove at least a foot to 2 feet of sheetrock so that it could air out fast enough. I didn't want to go there because if I did that, I know I wouldn't have been ready for the fifth. So we took a chance and we drilled holes underneath, and they bumped up the fans to it. I think our costs would have been much higher had I gone in and removed that. They would have required to. They would have been required to remove the insulation. Basically, that's it. It was a very very busy second after the New Year. So. And I'm kind of glad that we just decided. My wife was with me. In fact, I was going to drop her off at the mall, and I was going to stay here to just do a punch list. And she didn't go anywhere. She stayed in the car because I had to wait for everybody to come in. We left at 9:30 at night that day because that's about the time that they finished picking up all the water and setting the pans in place, and the dehumidifiers on there.
All right.
Any questions?
I do have quite a few questions. I don't know the page number on this picture.
Mm-hmm. That's, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But you had it up earlier. What is the round thing on the ceiling that is coming down?
Oh, I'll get there. This one?
Uh-huh.
That's an expansion tank. That tank is put there so that any air mm-hmm. or water buildup, it doesn't burst the water heater itself. It's supposed to take care of the expansion of air.
Okay. We did not have a surge protector for this building then?
This building, I don't think none of our campuses have a surge protector on the power source, if that's what you're asking.
Well, if I read your write-up correctly, the Public Service Board apparently had a surge of water causing the pipe to break, and everybody else's...
We're talking about the...
Pressure reducer.
The pressure reducer, yes.
Yes.
Blank there. Yeah, we were talking about the pressure reducer. Apparently, we have one on this side, but it's in the wrong side of the line. It's upstream, and it's supposed to be behind the backflow.
So it's useless.
Well, it allowed the water to come through, and this is just an assumption that I'm making. It's not been proven yet, but all I could surmise out of this is what was the cause. Mm-hmm. Was that two things happening at the same time? It's a lot of coincidence.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that at the high school, we've already replaced 5 drinking fountains because of the water pressure or lack thereof, consistent water pressure that the PSB is providing us. It's no secret. Our high school did not have one either. And when our water drinking fountains were bursting, the tanks were bursting, that was because there was too much pressure. And the water tanks can't take that pressure. So when I looked at the backflows, I found out that there isn't one, that there wasn't one there. So we went ahead and added one to protect the mm-hmm. high school. Since then, we've not had any of the tanks burst. But Five Star, who is the contractor that actually installed that, told us that this area right in here, this corridor right in here, he says, I know for a fact that you are not getting constant pressure. PSB is not able to give you that constant pressure. It drops, it goes up, it comes down.
Yeah.
It's just a seesaw. We did talk to PSB. The engineers are giving me the runaround.
Naturally.
And they're not, but they recognize that they have a problem there. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, EPCC has a problem with water pressure too.
And do collectively then we agree to confront them with that and ask for some kind of liability? I mean, that's unacceptable.
That's something that we just, you know, as we move on, we're going to have to do that. And in fact,
yes.
I'm going to have to introduce an engineer to prove it. We have to prove the point.
Okay.
They have all the means, but it's not going to be difficult because I know that McDonald's had a problem too.
I read that, yes.
And it burst their lines around the same time that it was happening to us. And a lot of this is typical when you're at the end of the line.
Yes, I understand.
You know, we're at the end of the line, and we get all the debris, we get all the junk. Mm-hmm. I got used to that at Socorro because we were always building at the end of in the middle of nowhere, and we're the ones that were getting all the debris in there. So this is typical until this area gets developed. and built, we'll start seeing things level out. I know that every time they build something, they go and dig, and they're looking for the water line, and they hit it.
Every
and
time.
And they burst it. And it's this year, they cut us off with water about three times. Fortunately, all three times were when we were not in school.
Because, I mean, I know from the warrant list, we paid them over $9,000 last month to have water. That's a lot of money.
Yes.
That's a whole lot of money, and it should be delivered in a, you know, an acceptable fashion that we don't have to have this. Dr. Murphy, with the board's approval, I'd like to see us write them a letter of our disapproval.
Well, okay, but going to Ernesto's point about approving it through engineering, is that possible?
Yeah, we have to do, yeah, it is possible.
Because right now we're in negotiation with PSB for the sewer project.
Oh, then I understand. Well, as your engineer.
As we, as we move on, I think it's not going to be too late to do that.
Okay.
It's easy to prove that.
Mr. Armendariz, I can't help but notice the terrible air quality in this building when I walked in. I saw that they had sprayed it with sporicidin. I am extremely allergic to sporicidin. Sporicidin also interacts with the mold and does not do things. It does not do what they say it's going to do.
Yeah, they sprayed.
I did a big study on it due to the sickness that it came upon me from having it used. I hear you coughing, and I feel sorry for you. Yeah, we need to make sure somehow that someone's accountable for the air quality.
Yeah, they did spray the carpet with it. They have not sprayed everything else yet. So what I asked them to do is to shampoo. That's part of their contract, is to shampoo the carpet, to take up all the junk that was collected on it and everything. And then our plan is to have an indoor air quality performed. It's scheduled to be performed at the end of February.
Okay,
we'll get a good reading as to where we are.
In the one picture where you showed the sheetrock cut in the wall and it showed the metal framing members, there was no insulation. Exactly.
We pulled the insulation. Yeah.
And in the other places, because that insulation is a hotbed for mold, as well as the sheetrock, it loves that. Do you feel fully confident that it's dry in the walls and that those fans
should? They do, because they put in their probes.
I understand.
And I know, you know, one of the things that we did is some of the areas we cut a bigger slice randomly.
Yeah.
Put our fingers in there to feel the insulation, and they were drying. In fact, they were supposed to be out of here in 3 days, which I was excited because I said, well, it will come here and we'll be ready. Yeah. But they stayed here two more days because some areas were just not where they wanted them to be.
We can't be careful enough about it. It's so vital for the health, you know, for a healthy building to have healthy employees. So I hope you'll, you know, stay on top of it. And, you know, the employees will come forth if they've got health problems that, you know, we should tend to.
So the air quality testing is in late February.
Late February.
So that'll give it another month to sit. And then will that detect mold?
We can ask for them to look. It's an indoor air quality. Yeah, it'll probably detect spores in the air. Yes, definitely. If they're loose in the air, we'll be able to detect. Yes.
Thank you. That's all my questions.
And we're covered on insurance. Mike, insurance?
Yes, we've already applied to our insurance carriers and submitted a claim with them. Our adjuster was out here while ZERPRO was conducting their equipment. We did an assessment, initial assessment, and basically their initial assessment is like Mr. Armendariz said, around 49, the high 40s, near 50 grand. But there are certain items that they're looking at. They're negotiating with ZERPRO and everybody else to lower their bills because they said this is not appropriate, not necessary, that kind of stuff. So they're on our behalf negotiating with some of the contractors. We are, I guess, liable for our deductible, which is $10,000. So look at this, we can. That's our ultimate liability is $10,000.
My hope is that we break even the way we should, even with the deductible, and that's what we should.
Yes, you should.
Yeah.
And I hope we won't cut any corners, because it won't come out of that $10,000 is all that's going to come out of our pocket. If more work needs to be done, we have a year to do it, is my understanding always with insurance.
What I would like to add is that Mr. Gonzalez shared with us that the invoicing that we received for all the contract work that has been done, the district will not go to the district. We are forwarding those.
We got clarification that yesterday. Mr. Armendariz and I met with our adjuster yesterday, and we were misinformed by our agent. We do need to set up the...
So they will go through us.
They will go through us this time. But that was just information we got yesterday.
One of the things that I did ask them is how fast they can send us, cut us a check. And the reason I asked that question is because I said, I don't want to have to move monies from my account or from our monies. I want it out of the insurance money.
Yeah.
And he said it was 5 days. I've since spoken with all the contractors. I said, we won't. This clock won't start to tick until 5 days from now. And they said it was okay. Because I don't want to have to wait. I don't have to want to transfer monies from my account and then get reimbursed.
I believe they're bound by policy that they have X amount of days. I think it's 7 to 9 days to get a check in our hands. Is that
exactly.
Right? Yeah.
And he said that this was moving along pretty fast.
Okay.
Because really, he spent six hours out here. And he agreed, in fact, that one of the things that he told me is that he agreed with procedures that we took. He said, I don't think the insurance company is going to have any problems
Good.
With everything that you
Yeah, do. And all your documentation is wonderful. Good. Any other questions, comments? Thank you very much.
The other part of this report is the financial services, the renovation report. I didn't put it up here, but I know that you all have photographs in your hand. Let's see. I have mine here, too. This, if you look at the photographs, let me just start by saying that this has a little bit of history. I put in May 2011 is when we started looking at it, but way before then, Martha Aguirre has been talking to me about this. She's been, you know, we've been tossing it around. I've been saying, no, I can't do it. I don't have the funding. And then finally, as May rolls along, and that was part of the budgeting that I had put in, this along with some other projects throughout the district. So I told her, yeah, we could do it. It was just a matter of when we can do it. And one of my biggest concerns was, as you know, when you're knocking down sheetrock and all that, you have that real fine particulate dust and all that. And we have several people. I know that in HR we have people with asthma. And I had real concern about doing that while they were there. And so we had looked at doing this during the spring break. Dr. Murphy, is that correct? That's when we were going to, we had it planned in doing it. I saw the opportunity to take care of it during the Christmas holiday, simply because it was a longer time, and it afforded, it was just the perfect time for that. So that's when I elected to start making a move. We started just a little bit earlier than that on it, and then we started doing it. The work isn't complete because I haven't done my punch listing. I know I've had some of my staff go in there and put tape around areas where they might have, not done the best work that they could do. And I must say that when they were working on it we had this accident, I pulled them off of that.
Yeah.
And I still told them, you still need to be done before the 5th. So they were doing double time between here and the restroom facility over here. So I anticipated that they would have a few problems on the cosmetic end of it, and that being the painting, the texturing and all that. I know we're going to have some issues there. I mean, some problems there because of I'm trying to fast track them out of here. But it's not like we're going to turn around and say, okay, this is good enough, you can leave. So I know I have one of my maintenance staff that comes around, puts in his blue tape on the item and says, okay, these are the things that you're going to repair and redo again. And they will do it. So they've gone back. In fact, they were resanding some of the areas. And unfortunately, because everybody's back, they're doing it in the evenings when no one's around. On the pictures, if I can walk you quickly through the pictures. The first view of the receptionist area is that door. We closed up the area. We relocated the door from this door was actually at the rear, which is we're trying to do that as much. We're trying to do this as much as possible. Reuse what we have rather than buy new. And we this door is not a new door. This is a door that was towards the back at one time. We created the travel clerk space immediately as you come into the space. I don't know if you, any of you have had the opportunity to go in there and look at what we have. And then, of course, the real reason for the big move is to create some cubicle spaces for the accountants at finance. And that's the third picture that you see in there. Right below that one, you see the new location of the emergency door. Now, you have that cabinet that's there. Well, that's going to be removed. All we're waiting for, I didn't want to remove it at the time because they had so much paper in there, so much important paperwork in there that I didn't want to remove it. So as soon as they do that, our plans are to create kind of like a little corridor, emergency egress through there. Okay? And then the picture next to it is where we removed the door. As you can see, it's at an angle. We created an angle instead of this little notch that it used to have. Mm-hmm. And now in the corridor, if you walk through there, it has a natural flow that takes you in a circle. We didn't lose much in the corridor. We're in compliance. And what we did is we were able to create a more functional space at that corner. That was it. Questions?
So in this picture, that cabinet's going to go away.
That cabinet's going to go away.
That won't do it for the emergency.
Yeah, no, that cabinet's going to go away. We just, we just didn't want to move it because it had some paperwork there that we were afraid that we, ladies would come and hang me if, if I moved their stuff.
Any questions?
Sure. Mr. Edmund, do you have a cost estimate?
Of this move, it's $7,000. About $7,001. Where I have it here.
Was it done in-house?
No, part of it is in-house. The other part is done by a contractor because we didn't have anybody during the holidays to be out here to do the work. $7,160.
And what budget does that come out?
That's out of my budget. That's out of the budgeted amount that we had for maintenance had set aside for this and other projects in the district. Actually, I had budgeted a little more than that. Because I anticipated it to be a little bit higher. I didn't know how much it was going to run. Simply because even they were the ones that moved all the cabinetry. Typically we move it, but they went ahead and did it. It was part, they didn't even charge. They only did it because they wanted to get out of there fast. And they moved everything.
Does that include, is that just labor or is that?
No, that's material.
Material?
Material and labor.
Yeah, but we did provide some modular furniture.
We did provide some ceiling tiles that were, you know, were damaged a long way. We had some ceiling tile. We did provide, I think only like 5 gallon of paint that we did provide for them. And then they reimbursed us by providing us another, we just had it available. And rather than them go get it, what we do is we do a trade-off.
None of this got hurt in the flood?
No, in fact, it made the turn, like I said, the water made the turn into here. And it didn't reach finance at all.
Too bad.
Didn't reach, didn't get into HR either.
The outside facade, it didn't hit that?
Looked kind of like it got it to me.
Yeah. I think the only thing that's left to be done there is I guess Martha's end, which would be getting the modular furniture for her accounting staff. That, the contractor's not hired to do that. That's somebody else.
Okay.
I have a question.
Yes.
How much do you anticipate on this whole project?
On my end, I was just moving furniture, moving walls, and it was $7,160. The plan was to try to utilize as much of the existing modular furniture that was around. You know, that's hopefully still the plan to try to fit in another additional space within all the layouts that we have.
Okay. So what else do we have planning for that? What else do we need?
The modular furniture, the
and how much do you anticipate?
believe the quote is coming in around 7,000.
7,000? Okay, let me tell you what I've heard, okay? Because there's always the difference between a want and a need. I don't see this, personally, I don't see this as a need. I see it as a want. We have not passed this bond, this remodeling wouldn't have happened. Correct?
No.
No. If I can go back a little bit to provide the history as to when that reconfiguration discussion began. Back in June of 2010 is when they moved the external funding coordinator from school resources into the finance department. At the time, I was the accountant and then was hired into the external funding coordinator position. However, every single working space in the finance was already used up. The fact that the accountant position remained vacant for 6 months allowed it for us to continue just with the same workspace. However, discussions at the time with Lessa, Kathy, and myself had started as to how we could utilize the same space to fit the required staffing. In addition, the board had approved the accounting clerk that August after the audit, the financial audit. And so that accounting clerk started in November. At that point, they hired an accountant and an accounting clerk, and we had no one extra space within the same purchasing area office. And so, again, the discussion was there. It was a need. However, because all the positions weren't filled, it gave us more room and time to continue working under the same workspace. When the second accountant was hired, which is now in April of 2011, last year, what I did was I moved the purchasing agent out of the office where there was two office desks at the time into that back area where the external funding used to be. External funding moved in, I moved the travel clerk into the back area where the door used to be so that just making sure that I had enough space for everyone. The two accountants were now working in the same office space. Now, what would happen often is as they deal with campus personnel, they each have different duties and would many a time have two individuals with two different conversations. However, within that room that they are in, it was very difficult to keep one conversation from the other, and that's where the need was. And as we moved forward, I knew that we needed to find that extra slot or change the accommodations so that the work was conducive, the day-to-day work was in a better suitable area.
Okay. I'm just telling you what was shared with me, and I mean, we need to be, you know, I mean, they said it was frivolous spending. I mean, we see this paint that's being trade-off. I don't think it's good practice to do that. It's a trade-off. I think they should be providing it as part of their services.
Well, they are providing it.
I don't think it is our duty to be providing them the material. And then, okay, here, then you come and pay us later on. I don't think it's good practice.
I agree. I understand what you're saying.
So,
but this remodel didn't have anything to do with our bond.
Well, I know. Well, regardless of the things that are happening.
Mm-hmm. I mean, he's paying for it out of his own budget, and so is
Mark. It's our money, Dr. Murphy.
Right.
It's not his budget. It's our money.
Right.
It's the district's money.
Right, but he takes his budget and he prioritizes.
Well, I understand that. I understand how the budget works. But it's not, it doesn't matter. It's a budget and it's a district's money.
Yes, ma'am. I totally agree. It's just, you know, I see this as a positive. We're getting those accountants out of that one area. We're improving the waiting area to start. The travel area is getting the upgrade, where instead of being back there by that door. And it's also fairly minimal cost, $7,000 for the remodel and $7,000 for the furniture.
Okay. Any other questions? Comments? No? Thank you, Dan.
Thank you very much.
Tony, that brings us to the consent agenda.
Yes, item 6 is the consent agenda, which administration recommends approval of as presented.
Does anyone want to pull any of the items from the consent agenda?
If not, I'll make a motion to approve the consent agenda.
Not so fast. I do have one thing, and this is simply a reminder. I had asked for a history of Sonatrol and why our security is disjunct. I would like to see that in the Friday packet.
Oh, for the financial?
Yeah, under the warrant list and the financial. Yes, please.
We'll get
anything
that.
Else? Anyone else pull anything? No? No? Okay, Armando, your motion is?
To approve the consent agenda.
Thank you. Thank you for the second. Dr. Murphy?
Through the chair, on item 6L, the school calendar, the board needs to approve it with the caveat that the spring break might flex as we learn the other entities, the universities and the school districts' spring breaks. We might have to change weeks. If that is the case, we will bring that back to the board.
Then, and could you amend?
Well, why don't we just approve it, and then when that changes,
yeah,
happen,
if it changes, you, probably, you come
I'm just
back.
Letting you know that we very well might have to come back.
I have a question regarding the school calendar. Dr. Murphy, we have some of our students here attend the Kate Center at the El Paso. How does it affect the attendance?
Well, you know, we had a different Christmas break this year, right, and it did affect the attendance. As I wrote in Friday Packet last week, we're not going to have that problem next year. We're going to be very much aligned with EPISD regarding the way the calendar falls next year. We're not going to have that problem.
Have you looked at their calendar already?
Well, they don't have a calendar, but I have spoken to them, and the only thing that seems to be out of line is our spring break, and we're waiting to hear what EPCC is going to do. I think Christmas is on Monday this year. Most school districts will go through that week, and we're going to be much better aligned.
Okay. Settled? Okay. With that, Tony?
Mrs. Casares?
Yes.
Mr. Cardano?
Yes.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Charles?
Yes.
Item 7A, Special Audit Preview Report of Canutillo High School and Denver Team Express related to procurement activity with discussion and possible action. Mrs. Aguita and Mr. Blanco.
Thank you, Board President Searles, members of the board, Dr. Murphy. We were asked to give really just an initial preview of the final audit. The audit has been completed, and I've spoken to Ms. Hidalgo about it. I would prefer to have her present her findings in a complete fashion and then meeting, but we wanted to make sure that we stay out in front of this. We do that. And so we're trying to make sure we all have information that becomes available to us so that you can start formulating ideas on what you want to do ultimately with the audit. A couple of things, just by way of history, this first came about in December 2nd of 2011. Ms. Aguita forwarded a memo to you all identifying some unusual procurement activities at Canutillo High School. The issues came about because of some checking and initial review of purchase orders. Now, through the initial review of this, there was the identification of Team Express as being the vendor. They were cooperative and open with the district, and they have been throughout the audit process. We have not identified anything that looks like it was intentional. There's no intentional malfeasance. There doesn't seem to be any intent to have done something improper to take advantage or to secure an improper benefit. That being said, when you receive your final report from Ms. Hidalgo, you have options on what you want to do with the ultimate results of the finding. There are some things that we'll have to deal with. There are some tax law issues. There are some credit issues. And there are some violations of school district procurement policies and regulations. Those are issues that you all have to address, and we'll deal with them with the final audit. But at this stage, and I've reviewed it with other attorneys in my office, including Mr. Rolls, asked me to review it with Renee Ordonez. Used to be a former U.S. attorney, he's a former prosecutor. He looked at it as well, and he doesn't see anything that looks intentional. So I don't believe we have any criminal activity going on. That's good, but there are some things that you all will have to deal with moving forward.
I would like to mention, and I did provide a copy of the original memo I provided to you back in December. We have been working closely with both the high school and Team Express to ensure that all of the pending invoices have been cleared and that we've received all items that were expected to be received. I believe that when we were pending some soccer jerseys that we either received on Friday or are about to receive this week, we are about to get some credit memos on the purchases that had no purchase order. And so basically, at this point, we're just tying up all loose ends to clear the any transactions that are pending.
My directive to administration through the chair is to, by the time Ms. Hidalgo, who is out of town tonight, that's why she can't be with us, when we give you the final report in February, that we will be completely through with Team Express, we'll have received all material, we'll have cleared all accounts, and that we will be done with that vendor. Mm-hmm. And so they have, between now and our next meeting, to finish all business with that vendor.
Sounds very good. I thank you for your report and for the transparency the district is showing in this manner. I'm very happy with what we've done and for your investigation. Thank you. Any questions from the board? No? Thank you very much.
Item 7B, discussion and possible action regarding list of brokerage firms. Mrs.
As I had mentioned at the committee meeting, I have made some communications with Cabrera Capital and Hinojosa and Estrada investment firms. And I did speak to somebody on Friday. I spoke with Mr. Aguilar from Estrada Hinojosa and then Mr. Tinajero from Cabrera Capital. I resent the information that we require that they fill out, and they assured me that they'd be filling this information out so that I can expedite the selection of the brokerage firms, but at this point, I don't have anything to present other than this.
So we'll see this at the next board meeting? Okay, thank you very much. Any questions? No? Thank you.
Item 7C, City Planning Commission, Special Meeting Report, Discussion and Possible Action, Dr. Murphy, Mr. Hernandez, Mr. Hernandez.
President Searles, board members, audience members, we just wanted to, and I put, this was in Friday packet, just wanted to brief the board on our meeting last week with City Planning Commission regarding two items. First of all, Ernesto went with me, Gustavo went with me. We met with about six staffers from the City Planning Commission, including Matthew McElroy, the Deputy Director of City Planning. We had one of the lead attorneys for the city and multiple staff members from the City Planning Commission. We talked initially about the land project, the neighborhood project that Winton Homes is endeavoring at the corner of Borderline and Westside Drive. We registered our disagreement with the urban planning in that agricultural area, the smart growth planning that they're putting in, that we felt it was much more of an agricultural and rural area as opposed to an urban environment. City Planning did share with us an initial neighborhood plan that was even worse, that was initially put together by Winton, and that the one that is now approved is actually better. It has a park in it, it has a little less density than the initial. But we still registered that that we would have hoped that we would have had earlier notification, and that we would have had better opportunity to make our points at the earlier. They initially went to us and said, "Well, look, we sent you emails," and Gustavo went out with the lead administrative assistant and looked at the email, and they were sending them to Ms. Veal, Dr. Veal.
No, they were sending it to someone in the IT department that. An email that
no longer anymore. Yeah, and so we corrected all the emails. We are now up to date. Gustavo is the lead on that, and we were able to do that. The second main item that this morphed into was a discussion regarding the master plan for the Upper Valley area, which is going in front of City Planning Commission and Council for full approval at the end of this month. And we, Jerry Wallace, Steve's associate partner, was also with us. We are going to make public comment on the master plan for the Upper Valley with a letter to the City Planning Commission that is due next Monday. this coming Monday by close of business day, and we will be attending the three meetings. There's three meetings, boom, 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 within a week's time to comment on the Upper Valley master plan. And the meeting was cordial. It was fairly stiff. They had their opinion that we were very concerned about the roads. You know, we really found that we couldn't get much traction on asking them to change the neighborhood plan, but then Ernesto started in on, well, what about our buses and what about the arteries and the routes and the upgrade in traffic that will occur, and we did not get very far on that either. They used the technical term of chaos. They used that not in a simple way. They used that as a technical term that before they would widen the road, they would have to see chaos on the road. They actually said that. And when everyone kind of laughed, and Matthew pointed out that chaos is actually a technical term in traffic and would have to reach that before they would widen the road. Ernesto pointed out very aptly that buses have a hard time making that turn at Westside and Borderland, and they have to turn into the oncoming lane. And now if you're stacking more traffic, it's going to be a nightmare. We asked if at least they could upgrade that intersection, and again, they said no, that would urbanize the area, which they felt was something we didn't want. Wait a minute, they said you don't want to urbanize the area, but you want to make it a more sophisticated intersection. You're talking against yourself. They tried to turn our logic against us, but in the end, it just wasn't logical at all when they're saying it has to get chaotic before they do anything. So, you know, we'll continue monitoring that area, and we'll definitely get on top of commenting on the Upper Valley Master Plan that is on planelpaso.org, which I shared with you on Friday in the Friday packet. And I don't know if I said it all, or...
We actually met with the city planning staff and city planning commission. I just wanted to make that clear.
Oh, the staff, yes.
So we met with the city staff, not the appointed commissioners from the city planning commission.
Dr. Murphy, did they show you a future land use map?
It is in planelpaso.org, and we are looking at it. Jerry is looking at it very carefully, and we'll be drafting language to share, if not in Eagle Notes tomorrow, certainly in the Friday packet.
And Mr. McElroy encouraged us and any board members and any members of the public to attend the meetings that are coming up. If they want to have that land remain as urban, as rural, to come to those meetings and make that desire be known as well.
And the first meeting, which is, it isn't an approval meeting, it's more of a comment meeting, we will be going in full force. Mr. Wallace from Steve's firm, Gustavo, myself, Ernesto, we will be going as an entity down there to that meeting to make our voice be heard.
Okay, and I think we have the land on Strahan that's very much an issue as well that we need to keep our eye on. I think their density keeps getting thicker and thicker and thicker, and no one is informing us of this. They have no communication. Now I guess they're going to.
Yes.
But I hope they understand that, you know, we just don't want to know about this little space over here. We're a big district. We're growing. We need to know about all the components that they're trying to put upon us. And hold their feet to the fire that El Paso cares about education.
One of the things that has come out of this is the charrette process that the city is involved in regarding the Northwest Master Plan. And next week, Canyon 2 ISD will be hosting a week-long charrette process, both here in the boardroom and at the high school, for public comment regarding the entire Northwest Master Plan.
During that week, the public will have the opportunity to come here to our boardroom and speak with city planners and urban planners about what they feel the plan should be for this area, including the Trans Mountain Corridor and also the rural areas to our Upper Valley.
Uh-huh.
So people will have the chance to let them know what they feel, how they feel this area should be developed or sustained as it is.
And could you please inform us in the Friday packet of the specifics of that,
yes,
Dr. Murphy? And
we Gustavo, just found out ourselves, and I'll have it in Eagle Notes tomorrow.
Gustavo, hopefully somehow we can get some information out to our campuses. I know that the parents in our campuses surely care, you know, whether their schools are overcrowded or not.
Great.
I think the board would appreciate that, to get the word out that this is going to be availed to them to give input.
Yes, ma'am.
Any other comments?
Just
yes, sir.
Doc, you said you're going in full force and you've got some language. What is that?
Well, if we want to make comment, they've suggested really two main things to do. First of all, by Monday close of business day, they're accepting any written material or letter about our thoughts on the master plan. So Jerry Wallace, who has been involved in this from the very start, looking at this, he is putting together a memo to give to the board about his thoughts about how it's laid out, and then we can do with it what we will from there. But we want to turn in a letter to city planning by Monday, close of business. And then I think it's Wednesday, 2 days later, is this planning meeting that they're going to have, in which they're going to accept public comment and have kind of a mini planning session about all the comments that come in. And we want to definitely be there as players to have Canyon's voice be heard.
So that letter would be from administration, since it could be approved?
That's true, yes, sir.
Okay.
But I would give it. I'm going to give it to you at the very latest in the Friday packet, so that you can make comment back to me before we turn it in on Monday.
Okay.
And just to clarify, the three meetings are staff meeting with the city planning commission, then a city plan commission meeting, and the last meeting is the city council meeting. Those are the three meetings that.
And they're all within like 2 weeks of each other. So yep. We're definitely going to be very much involved in it.
And that's not including the charrettes for.
No, the charrette is different.
Okay. Separate.
Okay. Tony, I think that, any questions, comments, everybody's good?
The scary thing is that if we would have not required that meeting of city planning, we would have never, with the bad email address, we would have never discovered that they were doing this master plan over the next 3 weeks. So we got lucky that we demanded it and they had the meeting for us.
Very favorable that you stayed on top of it, Dr. Murphy. Thank you. Tony, I think that takes us to number 8.
Yes, executive session, and the time is now 9:21 p.m. and the meeting is to be closed for consultation with attorney regarding architect contract for new pre-K-8 school and for discussion of personnel matters under Texas Government Code sections 551071 and 551074.
Stop.
Your screen color changed? Your screen color changed?
I don't know what
I did.
I think it's 10:57.
Yes, ma'am.
It's still January the 17th of 2012.
And we did go in at 9:21.
Thank you. And the board is back into open session from executive session. Where I would like to entertain a motion on agenda item 9A.
And I'll make a motion to authorize administration to enter into a contract on the terms proposed by the architect and the administration.
Mr. Blanco, is that correct? You said it correctly?
Yes.
I'll second the motion.
Motion made and seconded. Any further discussion? Not hearing any. Tony?
Mrs. Casares?
Yes.
Mr. Coronado?
Yes.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Searles?
Yes.
Congratulations.
Congratulations. Thank you.
Now we'll take us to...
Congratulations. We look very forward to working with y'all and getting an absolutely magnificent school to put our kids in. Thank you very much. That will take us to our favorite agenda item.
Adjournment.